This is The Market Online.
Hello, and welcome to The Market Online's podcast. Joining me is Jeff Nielsen, business writer and market analyst. He is also the head writer of Stockhouse's and The Market Online's Thematica. We are here to do a deep dive on his most recent article, Gold, the Eternal Commodity. Jeff, nice to have you.
Nice to be here, Karina.
Now, just to get started, why is now a great time for gold?
Well, so my answer to that would be it's always a great time to buy gold. And, you know, you just need to look back at the history. So when we left the gold standard, gold was priced at $35 an ounce, and then it was finally allowed to float freely. You know, so in the 50 plus years since then, it's appreciated by roughly 6,000%, which works out to, you know, approximately 12% a year uncompounded. So, you know, when you've got an asset that performs that spectacularly over that extended period of time, it's always a good time to invest in gold. But there are a bunch of reasons why it's even more advisable for people to add gold exposure today. And, you know, we need look no further than the less than successful battle that our central banks have had in trying to tame inflation. And, you know, because inflation is ultimately the biggest driver of the price of gold. And so as inflation spirals out of control, we expect the price of gold to rise at an even more rapid rate.
Now, a little bit deeper on just the inflation play, can you break that down for people who don't necessarily understand how and why that happens?
So that's a deceptively complicated question because as the creators of inflation, you know, the central banks try to obfuscate what actually inflation is all about. And in fact, they obfuscate by not even labeling it correctly. The best way to describe the phenomenon of so-called quote-unquote inflation would be to call it dilution. Because what is actually happening is that these central banks are printing up new quantities of their paper currencies at ever-increasing rates, diluting the value of all that currency. And so as the value of the currency is diluted, prices rise, and they call that inflation. In fact, in economics, where the term inflation originally comes from, the economic definition of inflation is to inflate the supply of money. You inflate the supply of money, you dilute the currency, and the value decreases and prices go up. So that's the phenomenon of inflation. It's never explained properly because the central banks don't want to be identified as the culprits. They want to play the role of heroes. We're the ones controlling inflation. No, they're the ones that create all inflation.
And this 2% inflation, I know this is about a goal podcast, but I guess it's indirectly related. This 2% number, is that realistic?
Well, so the next thing to understand about inflation is that inflation is effectively economic cancer. So when we have central banks saying they have a quote-unquote 2% target for inflation, you know, what they're basically saying is, oh yeah, we think it's good if our economies have a little bit of cancer. And, you know, so logical people would say, well, you know, no, there's no amount of cancer that's good. In fact, we'd be better off not having cancer in our economy. And so, see, the whole idea with inflation is our currencies are losing value. So, you know, your paycheck shrinks every single week in real dollar terms. If you have the opposite effect, if you have deflation, then every dollar you earn actually requires increasing purchasing power and people become more prosperous. So in legitimate economies with legitimate monetary systems, deflation is actually a path to prosperity and inflation is the path to poverty.
Okay, and where would you say we are right now?
Well, so again, people need to learn their monetary history. So with respect to fiat currencies, quote unquote, which is any currency that's not backed by gold, humanity's been experimenting with these paper currencies for roughly 1,000 years, and they have a perfect record. They always collapse to zero in value. And it's because as a quote-unquote fiat currency, they have no intrinsic value at all. So they only retain their purchasing power as long as they retain the confidence of the people. So what always happens over history is the governments or the central banks that control the supply of money lose monetary discipline. They start diluting these currencies at ever-increasing rates, people lose confidence in the currency and their value plummets to zero. So that's always what happens. And so the U.S. dollar, which is the basis of our global monetary system, has been a fiat currency now for over 50 years, which means, you know, in historical terms, its lifespan is nearly expired. And in fact, in that 50 plus years since the U.S. Dollar lost its gold backing, the U.S. dollar has already lost 98% of its value versus gold. So, we're 98% of the way to zero already, and that other and the rate of decline is accelerating. So that last 2% is not going to take 50 years. It's not going to take 10 years. It may only take 5 years. And then, you know, these currencies become worthless, and then what do we do?
Mm-hmm. And maybe just tell me a little bit about the supply of gold as being relatively flat.
So something that's remarkable about gold as this eternal commodity and eternal asset is that, you know, going back over the roughly 5,000 years since humanity first began, you know, mining and refining gold, the supply of gold has increased, roughly speaking, at almost an identical rate to the growth of the human population. So relative to the total amount of people in the world, the supply of gold has remained flat over thousands of years, which is, you know, a really remarkable phenomenon. But it illustrates why gold provides wealth preservation and price stability for anything that's priced in gold. So, you know, the U.S. dollar has lost 98% of its value versus gold. Well, it's lost 98% of its value versus almost everything. But if you price these same assets in gold, the price doesn't change.
Right. And I really like how you illustrate that in the article about sort of the historic, you know, a value of a gold coin to what it's worth today in terms of cash, like, and what you can buy.
Well, yeah, I have a sort of a favorite anecdote I like to use about that to illustrate, you know, the eternal wealth preservation properties. And so you go back to ancient Rome, and with a 1 ounce gold coin, a gentleman in that era could purchase the finest apparel of the day, which was, you know, a handmade toga, along with finely crafted belt and sandals. Flash ahead to the Renaissance. And with a 1 ounce gold coin, a gentleman of that era could purchase the finest suit of the day, a tailor-made suit and all the accessories. Flash ahead a few hundred years further to today. And today, with a 1 ounce gold coin, a gentleman can still purchase a fine suit and accessories. But because the price of gold is temporarily undervalued, you have to buy off the rack.
Right. All right. Now, in the report, you've signed the gold sector with a letter grade of A as a current investment opportunity. What do you mean by that?
So, again, you know, we have the two aspects of why gold should be an important component of every portfolio. It's a historic capacity to preserve wealth and be an anchor of any investment portfolio, and its near-term prospects for even greater appreciation versus other asset classes. So you put those two things together, you know, and how do you not give it an A?
And different investors and different analysts can supply a variety of reasons as to, you know, investing in gold. You've outlined three best reasons. Gold is a commodity, gold is a monetary asset, gold is an investment. We'll go through each of these and you can just explain, you know, the reasoning behind those. So first, let's just start with gold as a commodity.
So of course, gold is a precious metal, and what it means is that it has a relatively restricted supply versus other commodities, metallic commodities. And so in that respect, it tends to acquire some intrinsic value just due to its scarcity. However, of course, gold has this tremendous aesthetic appeal, which is why it's so popular in jewelry. And not just jewelry, but, you know, religious artifacts and religious architecture. You know, I mean, so much of the gold that's been mined in history is, in the most famous religious shrines around the planet. So because of this limited supply and aesthetic appeal, gold has intrinsic value in that respect. But what people don't often realize is that, because, like, gold is the best money. And you know, money is a very important tool in our society and our economies. And so, you know, if you have, you know, this important monetary tool that's, you know, fundamental to commerce, you know, then obviously the best version of money is a, you know, an important application for gold as a commodity there. But so, you know, the point here, of course, is that the line sort of blur between whether we're talking about gold as a commodity and when we're talking about gold as a monetary asset and when we're talking about gold as an investment asset. So, for instance, in India, it's well known that there's a tremendous demand for gold jewelry. much of that, probably, well, in fact, most of that comes from India's agrarian population, which is still over 900 million people. And so all of these people, they live a relatively, simple life. And in particular, most of these people lack access to banking services. So, when they're producing their annual crops, what are they going to do with their savings? Well, they could sell it and hold it in paper rupees. But of course, as we've just been discussing, these paper currencies depreciate over time, and Indian peasants are too smart to do that. So what they do with their surpluses that they earn from their agriculture is that they convert that into gold and silver jewelry, and then they wear that jewelry, mostly with females, worn around their shoulders, wrists and ankles. So yeah, in India, gold jewelry is actually a monetary asset. So, totally blurring the line between commodity and monetary asset, and it's how Indians keep their savings.
That's very interesting. I'm going to have to go get some gold bangles myself now. And then maybe just now let's move into as a monetary asset.
So gold is the prime monetary asset in the global monetary system. And it occupies this position for a couple of reasons. So first of all, we've illustrated its capacity to preserve wealth. So, all of the other paper currencies, lose their wealth. I mean, imagine if you were carrying around your liquid wealth with you.
Mm-hmm.
So, gold is like a waterproof bucket, and the U.S. dollar is like a sieve. So, you carry your wealth around in U.S. dollars long enough, and it's all gone. You can carry around your wealth in gold forever, and it's still all going to be there. So that alone makes gold, the best monetary asset because it holds its value. And of course, that's the primary function of money, as opposed to mere currency, is to retain its value.
Now, just with that, it just keeps popping up for me. We were at VRIC, and there was a company that had gold sort of in a dollar form, and it was the grams. It had grams per dollar in like this paper type currency. It wasn't paper, but it was like some type of a plastic looking like a dollar bill. And then like they would have like a hundredth of a gram, and it was like using a bill to pay for things. They also explained that there are places using gold as currency in this regard. What are your thoughts on that as we sort of, on the back of this as a monetary asset?
So, I've been writing about gold for many years and going back even to the early days, I was talking about how, I foresaw, one day that we would literally be using, gold and silver again as money, as instruments of commerce. And, I've generally been scoffed at. It's like, oh, no, never going to happen. You're some sort of, right. Doomsday fanatic. But of course, what you're pointing out about these increasing numbers of denominations of gold coins down to, a hundredth of an ounce. Why do that? And why would people want to accumulate all these various denominations unless in their minds they haven't planned to use gold as money again, as it has been used for thousands of years? And of course, something I found really interesting that happened just recently is Costco has started selling gold in their stores. And, Costco's having a problem, which is that they can never keep it stocked. Put some gold in their store and boom, the supply is gone in just a week or so. This tells us that people are getting, alarmed by how they see and feel the pain of their paper currencies depreciating in the form of higher prices. And as a result, they're getting interested in assets that will preserve their wealth, like gold. And of course, if you're a business and you're trying to run a business and inflation keeps going higher and higher, at some point, inflation becomes such a pain in your business operations that, what you're paying out for your raw materials, and then what you're eventually able to realize in the final purchase price no longer adds up because the currency has lost so much value in along the lines. Whereas if you're doing your commerce in gold, you're paying for your inputs in gold so that you're not feeling this price inflation and you're getting gold back in return for what you sell, then you're immunized from the pain of this inflation and your business has a much better chance of surviving.
Yes. And on the third point that you made, what about gold as an investment? What does that encompass?
So again, you know, it's a matter of how do people want to look at gold. If you look at gold as a monetary asset, then it's like, okay, gold is all about wealth preservation. I put my wealth into gold, mm-hmm. and I know that I'm going to keep it forever. But the flip side of that is to look at gold as a quote-unquote investment asset to counter the effects of inflation. So, as I just discussed, you know, earlier, since we left the gold standard and the price of gold's been able to float freely, you know, since 1971, the price has increased by roughly 6,000%. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, if, you know, everything has gone up in price by roughly 6,000%, then you haven't really made a net profit on your gold. You've just avoided all the losses of inflation. So, you know, an investor is going to look at that nominal 6,000% return and say, hey, I did a great job in investing in gold. The same person who views gold as a monetary asset is going to look at that same interval and say, I did a great job of preserving my wealth with gold. It's two sides of the same coin. So, you know, because people are misled about inflation and the bankers who, you know, control a lot of our investment decisions don't factor that into our investment equation, you know, it's not generally understood that, you know, wealth preservation is ultimately the objective of investing. If you can retain your savings and not lose any of it over time, then that's the path to prosperity. So, you know, going back more than 100 years, you know, before we really had a stock market, you know, people didn't invest their savings, but they didn't get poor. Well, why not? Because we had price stability. We had a gold standard. So since their wealth, their savings retained its full value over time, they didn't need to invest it. They just needed to be prudent with their fiscal management, and they knew that their savings were still going to be with them in their old age.
Now, this just brings up a question for me when you have, if you just, like you were saying, if you just had savings and it didn't do anything, like didn't go up necessarily. But I think now if the savings doesn't go up, you're still down because of inflation.
So, yeah. So as inflation has inflation has been acknowledged more in recent years, mm-hmm. Then you see more discussion in terms of net returns, you know, return minus inflation. And, but yeah, for the longest time, you know, that wasn't really factored in because, of course, you had the central banks pretending that inflation was only 1 or 2% per year. And, you know, like anybody who goes to the grocery store, you know, over those years when inflation was supposedly 1 or 2%, you know, knows that that's a fiction, you know, that in prices, you know, for food, we're increasing, you know, far more than 1 or 2% per year. And of course, real estate, rent and housing prices have been increasing far more than 1 or 2% per year. And then the other thing to factor into this inflation equation is the quote-unquote basket of goods mm-hmm. that is used to calculate the inflation rate. So as people, as our societies have gotten poorer and poorer, and in fact, our standard of living has fallen shockingly since we lost the gold standard, the basket of goods changes from being this really mixed basket of, you know, electronics and clothing and food and shelter and everything to just basically food and shelter. So, you know, if food and shelter is going up at 10% a year or 15% a year, you know, you can say, oh yeah, official inflation is 2% a year. Well, it's a fiction because for most people, they're feeling that 10 or 15% hit every year. And so if you can't, you know, find a way to get your paper investments to appreciate by that amount, you're losing money. With gold, there's no worry because gold always retains its full value.
All right. And you mentioned a little bit about real estate there. How does gold hedge against real estate for people that are like, well, my real estate investment will appreciate and sort of like they're choosing between maybe gold and real estate?
So last year when we covered gold with Thematica, I pointed out another interesting historical example to people, and it was a comparison of the prices of residential real estate in Manhattan over time. And the comparison was pricing Manhattan real estate in U.S. dollars versus pricing it in gold. So, you know, over a span of roughly the 100 years that I looked at, priced in U.S. dollars, residential real estate in Manhattan appreciated by roughly 10,000%. So you think to yourself, oh, wow, you know, what a fantastic investment, you know, Manhattan residential real estate was over 100 years. You price Manhattan residential real estate in gold over that same 100 years, and it increased 25%, 0.25% per year. almost nothing, almost no different at all between Manhattan residential real estate and gold over 100 years. But then, you know, you have to look further. Well, if you're holding real estate, you're paying property taxes, you're paying maintenance costs.
Right.
So there's costs to holding that real estate. So you don't even get to net that 0.25% per year.
And your down payment that you're also...
Well, you know, let's assume you paid cash, you know, and you're just having to pay maintenance on it. Even so, your real estate is costing you money every year, whereas there's virtually zero cost to holding gold. So, you know, that means that over, you know, the long term, gold is at least as good an investment asset as real estate, and arguably better because there's no cost to holding. And of course, it's portable. You can't carry your Manhattan real estate around with you, but you can carry, you know, a bag of gold.
Where do you put that bag of gold?
Some place very inconspicuous.
Unless you get robbed. See, that's the other side of it. Oh, there's always these sides. And well, this is a good time to talk about, well, now that we talked about gold rising from, you know, 1971, it was $35 an ounce, you know, up to around just over 200,000 now. Or sorry, 2,000 an ounce. Wow, 200,000, I need to get some. But
Another thing that I laugh at is when I'm hearing people, you know, supposed gold experts make their quote unquote long-term predictions on the price of gold.
Yeah.
And you'll hear people talk about, oh yeah, it could go to, you know, $3,000 an ounce, or it could go to $5,000 an ounce. Well, when the US dollar is at zero in value, the price of gold is going to be infinite. So, you know, not 3,000, not 5,000, not 10,000. So yeah, 200,000, you know, at some point as the US dollar goes to zero, gold's going to be $200,000 an ounce, unless the US dollar simply gets removed from circulation before that happens. So this is basically, you know, in this hyperinflation death spiral that happens to all fiat currencies, a lot of times they simply get pulled from circulation once they you know, and replaced with another currency unit, because, you know, once they totally lost the confidence of the population and their value starts going straight down, it can't even be used as money any longer, currency any longer.
Well, my original question was sort of your forecast or your prediction, again, that gold prediction from, you know, say the end of this year or even 5 years. And you can answer that question, but now that my question might now is changing to, when do you think the U.S. Currency is going to come off the table?
So there's several dire factors that are putting more pressure on the U.S. dollar by orders of magnitude than at any time since we went off the gold standard. And so another thing that I talked about in last year's edition of Thematica is the phenomenon of quote-unquote de-dollarization. And so the significance of this is that with this enormous supply of U.S. dollars sloshing around the world as the quote-unquote reserve currency, in order for that supply of dollars to retain value, it needs to be used. If all of a sudden you get into a situation where there's this enormous glut of dollars that nobody wants, then of course, you know, the simple market fundamentals, that's going to cause the value of the dollar to crash. So what do we see with de-dollarization? So when the US and the rest of the Western nations went, you know, full psychopath in their economic sanctions against Russia, they terrified the rest of the world, everybody else who had also have assets held in US dollars. And it's like, gee, if they did this to Russia, they can do this to us. So I'm going to get rid of a bunch of my US dollars. And so this is happening all over the world. And of course, China, as a rising economic power, is in the best position to expedite this de-dollarization trend because it's the biggest global trading power. So China has been, not just in recent years, but going back, you know, as much as 15 years, has been draining the swamp. China's been doing all of these bilateral currency swaps and trading agreements with countries where basically they're taking dollars off of people's hands and giving them yuan. And then those yuan are then being used in bilateral commerce between these two countries, and the dollars are removed from circulation. China basically sells the dollars and buys gold with it. And so this is how China is draining the swamp and shrinking the market for U.S. dollars. And of course, at some point, you reach a shrinking critical mass where this glut of dollars becomes so serious that the exchange rate of the dollar could, you know, again, go straight down vertically at any time. And so this is very unpredictable because, of course, the rate of de-dollarization is not entirely predictable. And then there's, of course, the other fundamentals, which, of course, the ever-increasing creation of new dollars. So as, you know, as you have the combination of this rising glut of dollars because they're not being used and an ever-increasing supply of new dollars piling up, you know, at the same time, you have these factors compounding each other, and it could lead to an explosive devaluation in the dollar at virtually any time. So making firm predictions here is so difficult because, as I pointed out earlier, this is a confidence event. When people lose confidence in the U.S. dollar, it's going to crash to zero. When does that final lack of confidence occur? Is it next year? Is it 2 years down the road? Is it maybe 5 years down the road? It's not going to be much longer. The days of the dollar are numbered.
Well, and just for fun, what do you think gold might do in this year?
I have to laugh when I look at a lot of quote unquote gold experts because, you know, they'll say, oh yeah, I think gold could go to $2,100 this year. Well, from $2,000, that's a 5% increase. So, gee, you know, gold's been rising 12% per year over 50 years, and you're predicting a 5% increase and you're calling yourself a gold bull? I mean, you know, let's get real. So, I mean, if gold has a good year, it could go to $2,500. If there's a monetary crisis this year, it could go over $3,000. You know, so people have to understand that as we get closer and closer to the final death spiral of these fiat currencies, we're going to see the nominal price of gold increase exponentially. And so the whole idea of, you know, this 12% per year sort of thing, you know, that's going to be in the rearview mirror very quickly. And, you know, we can see days where the price of gold goes up 12%.
Well, that just falls. And then the recessions are good for gold kind of comment falls in along those lines that troubled times are good for gold.
Gold is the ultimate safe haven. So as the economic uncertainty increases, that again pushes people towards gold, which of course explains the Costco phenomenon. You know, people get worried and they see gold and it's like, hey, I want some.
So, and then in general, when we talk about investing, because these are all obviously great and strong reasons, I'm wanting to leave here and go buy some gold. but what am I buying? Am I buying the physical gold? Am I buying stocks and gold? And that price that you see that says gold is, you know, 2,000 and, you know, over 2,000 an ounce. When you go to buy physical gold, it's more than that.
So I always recommend physical gold, even though you have to pay the premium on the purchase, because of the fact that when you're holding physical gold, you're not exposed to any quote unquote counterparty risk. So even if you're holding gold in the form of an ETF or some sort of gold fund, you're assuming the counterparty risk that the company you're contracting with will be able to deliver that gold at a future date. And certainly with respect to many of the gold ETFs, which I've looked at very closely, and as have a number of gold experts, their capacity to deliver gold in the future is extremely dubious. So this is why physical gold, you know, is without question the best way to get exposure to gold itself. Now, gold mining stocks are a very interesting complement to investing in gold for one important reason. And the gold mining companies that produce gold provide natural leverage to the price of gold. Mm-hmm. You know, if the price of gold goes up 10%, the profit margin for that gold miner may increase 20%, 30%, even 75%, depending on their cost of producing gold. And so that increased profitability as the price of gold rises is what provides this natural leverage. And so, you know, for people who, you know, take, you know, credence in my prediction for rapidly increasing gold price and are looking for a way to leverage those advances, the mining stocks are incredibly attractive, not least which is because they're sitting at ridiculous valuations. You look at a lot of the mining companies, and I look at the long-term charts, and some of these companies are priced at virtually the same level as they were in 2015 when gold was $1,500 an ounce. Mm-hmm. So there's all of this unappreciated gains in these mining companies that are going to materialize at some point. And then, if you know, as the price of gold appreciates beyond that, you know, there's the opportunity for, you know, very large multiples with these miners when they start to run.
Right. That's the, and I had an interview with Gwen Preston, a resource maven, and she talked about a couple of them being 10 baggers, meaning what you're talking about is sort of the exponential growth, which is hard for the outside maybe investor to see right away. But I think that's sort of what you're explaining when you talk about that potential there.
Well, and of course, if we see gold itself become a 10 bagger, what does that mean for the miners? It means, 100 baggers. The miners offer spectacular upside potential when they start to run. And, I've been extremely disappointed with the performance of mining stocks. But of course, our markets are so dominated by trading algorithms that we basically have no price discovery anymore. So you don't see rational pricing in markets. At times, markets will correct to more rational valuations, but these revaluations are unpredictable. So we know that gold mining stocks, have a large revaluation to do to get to a rational price level. When that's going to happen, whether it's next month or 6 months down the road or next year, again, that's hard to say with precision.
All right, and terms of investment. So how long for investors when they look at these investments? What sort of is the time frame?
Well, so of course, if you're talking about wealth preservation, you're talking forever.
Yeah.
When do you not want to preserve? When do you stop wanting to preserve your wealth? Well, the day you die. If you're looking at gold as a monetary asset, then the time horizon is infinite. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at gold as an investment, you may have a shorter horizon, specifically because you see strong possibilities for gold over the short term. But as quote unquote the eternal commodity, there's basically no downside risk to gold over time. There can be intervals where the price of gold declines, multi-year intervals occasionally, mm-hmm. but over the long term, the price of gold always goes up because it's denominated in the currencies that are always losing value.
Right. So we've seen that increase from 1971 when it was priced at $35, like you said, 6,000% increase to now. Is there a chance? I mean, from what you've been saying, I feel that there's the opportunity for that to be even more as we move forward.
Yeah, this is the whole point. As the currencies lose value at ever increasing rates, the price of gold as a wealth preservation response is going to appreciate in nominal terms at an ever increasing rate. So whether you want to look at this as making gold a more attractive investment mm-hmm. or an even more important wealth preservation asset, again, it's basically two sides of the same coin.
And what is the chance that the dollar doesn't devaluate and goes in the other direction if they decide to fix that situation? Is there even a fix?
No, we're long past the point where any of these economies can fix themselves. And so the problem at this point is that the entire Western world is drowning in debt. So at this point, with interest rates only at around 5%, the U.S. is now spending more than $1 trillion per year just to pay the interest on its existing debt. So, and of course, the U.S. doesn't have that money, so it has to conjure up another extra $1 trillion of U.S. dollars just to pay its interest. Pretend to pay interest, because of course, if you're printing money to pay interest on your debt, you're not really paying your bills. So this is the whole point. Back when the economies were arguably still solvent, it was generally recognized that if you ever reached a point where your national debt reached 100% of GDP, and of course, GDP isn't income. GDP is just gross economic activity. If you ever reach a point where your national debt exceeds 100% of GDP, you're past the point of no return. Well, all of these Western economies are past the point of no return. The U.S. dollar, U.S. is sitting with $34 trillion in debt, and even with its inflated GDP numbers, it claims to have an economy of roughly $25 trillion in size. So it's basically obviously insolvent, well past the point of no return. And of course, it's the insolvency that means that the currencies can never be rescued, because this is why they have to be increased, conjured into existence at ever-increasing rate to stop the bankruptcy of our nations, because it's only this ever-increasing conjuration of new currency to pretend to pay the bills of our governments that allows them to forestall official declarations of bankruptcy.
Hmm. And how does the price of gold, or how does gold affect copper and other commodities?
So I wouldn't say that gold affects the prices of other commodities. I would say that a better way to think about this is to start looking at the world in terms of pricing other commodities in terms of gold. So this is another way where, you know, we sort of live in this surreal reality where, you know, everything is priced in dollars, or if you live in Europe, it's priced in euros. Well, of course, you're pricing valuable assets in terms of worthless currencies. So, you know, that's logically dubious, you know, in so many respects. Whereas for thousands of years, when the world used gold as money, everything was priced in gold or priced in silver. You're pricing the value of one hard asset in terms of another hard asset. So you have a rational basis for valuation of assets. So, you know, as gold acquires more primacy in the monetary system, as people become more interested in gold, then that would be a way for people to reorient their thinking, is to start looking at pricing oil in terms of, you know, how much barrels of oil per ounce of gold, you know, how many pounds of copper per ounce of gold.
Right.
And because that is, in fact, a better way for people to rationally price these other assets, because how can you rationally price an asset that's expressed in a paper currency that has no value?
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like I have got all of the information that we need, that I require, that I need. It was very informative. Definitely shifted some thought processes for me, you know, as after we shut this down. But is there anything else you want to add?
No, I think we've touched on most of the basics. You know, it's like I say, gold is a no-brainer, both in terms of its near-term potential and its long-term performance. And so when you have something like that, you know, you don't have to be smart to make it sound attractive. You know, you just have to basically lay the facts out there and let people make their own decisions.
Well, thank you so much. That's Jeff Nielsen. He is the head writer for Thematica. And that was on this month's article, Gold, the Eternal Commodity, which you can find on The Market Online and on Stockhouse. Thank you so much, Jeff.
For our full disclaimer, visit stockhouse.com/legal/disclaimer.